Oh, hi, it's me, Dave from Before, Dave Hill from Showbizzes. And this week, it's a special bonus episode of The Novelizers featuring The Daily Show's Asif Manvi and The Tonight Show's Chase Mitchell novelizing the first scene of the classic film Scream. Get ready to rumble. Or not. There was a lot of yous in
Get rumble. Ready to rumble!
Oh, okay. Thank you, Stephen. No, okay. Well, you did it. That's good, right? I mean,
yeah, that's fine.
I mean, I wasn't asking you, I was asking the audience.
Oh, right.
Don't want your popcorn, don't want your milk duds, don't want my shoes stuck in pools of sticky cola. Don't show me romance, don't show me fist fights, just show me words printed out under the book light. Yeah, baby, novelize the movie. Give me sentences, paragraphs, and nothing to see. Yeah, novelize the movie. Write a book and turn it into a podcast.
Welcome to a very special episode of The Novelizers. We're taking a little break from our regularly scheduled season, The Dark Knight, to novelize the first scene of the classic 1996 film Scream. And we're joined by this week's amazing narrator.
He's a Peabody Award-winning actor, writer, and producer. He served as a correspondent on the multi-Emmy-winning Daily Show with Jon Stewart. He starred for four seasons in the hit CBS and Paramount Plus series Evil. He's currently starring on Broadway in Fallen Angels, Peacock's The Miniature Wife, and can next be seen this May in AMC's The Terror, The Devil in Silver. I want to do cool stuff. Gosh, I feel like a loser. Welcome to The Novelizers, Asif Manvi.
I go right out of the gate. I don't wait. I don't wait for you to hit record. I'm just on it.
I like it. Yeah, would I lie to you? The U.S. version. That was very fun.
The short-lived U.S. version.
I shouldn't say this about myself out loud, but I fear that I may be panel show poison. Because whenever there's a panel show that I love, and I'm like, here we go. It's a panel show shooting in New York. I hope it's on for 30 years, and then it's guaranteed.
Yeah, it was either you or Brooke Shields. I don't know who.
Whoa, we're the two horse people of death. Something.
Were you on? I remember you were. I don't remember the story that you told, but.
I was on with a Real Housewife of somewhere or another.
Oh, yes.
Giselle. Oh, yeah. I can't remember her last name, but.
Real Housewife of like, I think it was like of Westchester or something.
Yeah. And I remember, and this is a reflection on me, not her, certainly. I didn't know who she was because I live in a world of my own design, my make believe, where I don't know what's happening. With reality television. Yeah, to be fair, she didn't know who I was either. So, but I do know that when I told other people who my teammate was, they were all very excited about it. So then I, in turn, had retroactive excitement about it.
Wow.
If that's the thing, well, I don't even know.
We were happy to have you. You were great. And I just remember it being... The whole thing was just a very positive experience, and then we thought we were going to get another season, and then CW was basically like, "We're not a network anymore." So we can't
this industry, I'm network poison. I destroy whole networks.
You destroyed the net. You brought the entire network down.
I'm the black mold of networks.
Oh man. I'm gonna say that it wasn't all your fault. I'm not. All right. It was a collective. It was a collective problem. Anyway, it was good to be here and good to be talking to you now.
Yeah, we're back. And I feel like the world has Asif Manvi fever with Miniature Wife, Fallen Angels. You're like attacking all platforms.
The Novelizers?
And Novelizers.
Well,
yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to say. And leading up to... The Novelizers. Yeah. Just when you think there's nowhere left to go.
I know.
Then boom.
I think The Novelizers is a fun idea. I thought it was a very clever interesting, fun sort of thing. You know, the having people sort of what do you call it? Like, we basically did the sound, the voice track, I guess, of the movie. You know, like
it was kind of exactly right.
Is that right? I don't know what I'm saying. I'm using words, but I don't think they're.
I think we have a brand new elevator pitch for the show.
That is,
yeah, it was I thought it was very clever. Thanks for inviting me to do that. It was fun.
And you did Scream, my sources tell me. And when I say my sources, I mean Steven.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I get that this is not a big budget production because you're in a closet.
I'm in a closet, essentially.
That's a set on a soundstage.
Oh,
actually.
Is that all right? Okay. Oh, yeah. It just makes it look like it's like a backdrop that makes
it
look.
Yeah, it's a reboot I'm working on. It's called. Okay. I have it written down here somewhere.
I should get one where it looks like I'm just sitting on the toilet.
Yeah. Yes, the technology is there.
Just get the back of the toilet and then like some shelves and like people be like, are you in the
where are you now? Are you
I'm hearing
are
some
you
very loud?
No, no, sorry, it's my phone and I don't. Okay. I'm sorry, it's apologizing. It's pinging. I don't know why.
Right.
I put it on silent, but I don't know.
Where are you? Are you on Broadway right now as we speak?
No, I'm on Warren Street. In Brooklyn.
Oh, okay. Right over there in Carroll Gardens, is it?
In Cobble Hill.
I used to live in Cobble Hill. I lived on Amity Street. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's not far from me.
Amity between Hicks and Henry, the only non-adorable block in all of Cobble Hill. I was like, give me the one ugly block.
I don't know. Yeah, like, it's funny. I've lived here like 3 years now. Yeah, right. No, 4 years. 4 years now. Sorry. Can't do math. But anyway, and I still get lost because I lived in Manhattan for like, you know, 20 years. And so I moved to Brooklyn and I still go the wrong direction. So I know the Amity is close to me, but I couldn't tell you how to get there.
I wouldn't rush there. I mean, it's not a bad street, but it's you know,
I
there's
feel
not
like I've gone past it in my travels.
How are you? Was it hard to transition from Manhattan life to Brooklyn? You have to get all new friends. Yeah,
it's like the city mouse going to the country. It's like, you know.
Yeah.
No, we moved here when my wife and I had our son, and mm-hmm. he was about 2 years old. And then we were like, we should move out of our Manhattan apartment and find something. And I was also on a TV show. So I was like, oh, well, I'm going to go do this now, you know. And so we bought a place in Brooklyn. And I love it. I actually never go into the city now unless I have to. Like, I'm on Broadway now, so I have to go into the city. But
yeah,
otherwise, I stay in my house like all the time. It's kind of great.
Oh, that's excellent.
And I just sit in the closet of my house.
Yeah, that's well.
There's a shoe boxes back there. You have a lot of shoe boxes.
It is. These are my girlfriend's shoes and clothes.
Oh, yeah.
It's a clothing rack.
I was going to say.
But it has like a lot of. We've managed to create the illusion of a closet in a.
And I should explain to listeners who aren't watching.
Oh, sorry. Yes, that's
right.
There
are shoe boxes behind Dave Hill.
He looks like he's in a closet of women's clothing.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the appearance. And then there's a lot of shoe boxes in
the
far closet that behind him.
Yes.
And it's very colorful women's clothing. So it's.
Oh,
it's,
yeah. She's not afraid.
No, a lot of sequins and shiny stuff there that I could not imagine you wearing.
No, well, you know, we're always entertaining. We're always. So you got to break out the outfits.
Great.
Are you dark, as they say, on Broadway? Why are you not at the theater?
I'm doing this. And then heading straight to the theater.
Oh, okay.
Like, once I'm done with you guys, not to be like, not to put it that way, but once we're finished here, once I'm done with this commitment, I have to get to my next commitment.
The next, which is Broadway. How do you get there? Do you take the subway or do you
practice, my friend?
Oh man!
Nobody has ever given me that setup. I've been waiting to say for 40 years.
No one's
ever given me just the greatest setup ever. How do you get there? It's just the greatest setup.
I've been waiting for that
for a long time. Thank you. I take the F train.
Oh wow, then, man of the people! I like that.
Yeah, I take the F to the A.
Okay, yeah. Maybe a transfer at J Street, I guess.
Oh, you probably do a J Street transfer. Yeah, like a real strap hanger. I take the F to J Street.
I mean, you could transfer at West 4th, but I don't recommend it.
I'll get the A or the C. Sometimes I'll get the A, but the A, you know, there's always trouble on the A. I don't know if you've heard that. That's an old New York saying. There's always trouble on the A. And because it'll just sit in the tunnel and it's just that, right?
Yeah.
So sometimes I'll hop on the C, even though it's a local, but it'll actually get me there faster.
Oh, yeah. I like a nice local train.
Who doesn't? I mean, you know, it's like if you can't relax on a local train.
Yeah, what are you even doing?
Yeah, you know, like, yeah, get on. That's what I'm saying. C. You'll always be there. I don't know.
Well, yeah.
A, trouble on the A.
Yeah, it's the trouble train, they call it.
This is great because Asif, your manager, was like, make sure he plugs the C train while he's
there. Because they want me. The C train has been
very happy.
My manager for a while, like, he takes it every day and he never talks about us.
Yeah. Speaking of plugging, you want to tell us about the show?
Oh, yeah. I'm doing this play. It's called Fallen Angels. It's on Broadway at the Todd Hames Theater on 42nd Street. Let me give it the big plug. It's funny. It's, if you like a little Noel Coward British farce.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny. It's fast-paced. It's got Rose Byrne, Kelly O'Hara. Rose Byrne just coming off her big Oscar nomination. Kelly O'Hara, who's a Broadway legend, Christopher Fitzgerald, Tony nominated, Christopher Fitzgerald, Tracy Chimo, Tony nominated, Mark Consuelos with his big TV talk show in the morning there, and Asif Manvi, the guy from the podcast world.
I want to see it.
No, it's great. It's really fun. It's an hour and a half, no intermission, so.
See, now you're speaking my language.
Yeah, I know. People, I never realized how important that was to people that, like, we're an hour and a half, no intermission, and people are like, I'm in, I'm there.
Well, you're done. I feel like I'm always running into trouble but I went to see Hamilton, very popular.
Yeah.
And it starts, at first I'm like, wow, what a production. But then by hour nine... I start to turn on it.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but it's 3 hours. It could have been. Yeah. I think they could have banged that out in about 45 minutes.
Oh, and if you have kids, they want to always hear it in the car.
But you
only listen to the first, the first act because by then you're there. So
yeah, yeah. So you never hear the rest of it anyway.
There's like 2/3 of the show you've never heard before until you get to the theater.
So that's happening. And then today we're taping this today. I don't know when this is going to go out, but of course we're taping it today. That's where it makes sense.
Yeah.
But it's April 9th and today is my TV show. Not my TV show. It's a TV show I'm in.
Miniature Wife.
The Miniature Wife on Peacock, which is also very funny and crazy and wacky, and the title is not a metaphor, it's literally
Elizabeth Banks is small.
She plays a 6-inch miniaturized wife who gets miniaturized by an accident, a science accident that goes wrong. So it's basically Honey I Shrunk the Kids meets War of the Roses. Remember that movie?
Oh, yeah.
Meets Tom and Jerry. It's kind of.
Yeah, I'm excited.
It's a fun show.
Greg Mottola directed some of it.
Greg Mottola directed the pilot and a couple of the, I think, first two episodes.
Yeah.
And it's super, it's just crazy and wacky. And I play Matthew McFadden, who is the other star of it with Elizabeth Banks. I play his business partner. A friend, Ronnie Chang, is in it.
Oh, nice.
You know, yeah.
You know Ronnie
Chang? Yeah, on the show. Yeah.
He's in it. Zoe Lister-Jones, Sean Clifford. It's just a whole bunch of very talented people.
And Elizabeth Banks has a small role in the show.
Ah, woo! All right.
And tell her that one. Yeah.
Practice. Anyway, I should wrap up in a couple of minutes, I guess.
Oh yeah, you gotta go to Broadway. I would be freaking out. I would be.
Yeah, I'm gonna leave and then get there and then. Well, the show's at 8.
So let them wait. You know,
they
build anticipation.
An hour and
you're
a half,
in the novelizer.
10 minutes. They can wait.
Yeah. I was already excited to see this play, and then when I heard hour and a half, yeah, no, I'm a fan of yours. I'm a fan of Noel Coward's.
Are you a fan of Noel Coward's?
I am.
I didn't know. I wouldn't have guessed it, but when you say it, it all makes sense.
Well, you see the robes behind me, and all
I
that.
I see the clothes.
You get it.
I hear the British witticism in your
yes.
voice.
Yes. And then, but yeah, that so I was already in, but when I heard 90 minutes, then yeah. I was double. I was already in, but now I'm even more in than I was in before.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you for joining us, for taking
You're
the
welcome.
Time to join us.
Yeah. I think that, do you guys, is Rob Kuttner one of the people that works with
he
you guys?
Is. On, yeah.
on
he is. Yeah.
Tell him I said hi, because he's an old buddy of mine from The Daily Show.
Yeah, I will do that.
You know, like a former Daily Show writer.
Yeah.
Anyway, just thought I'd just give Rob a shout out. Nobody ever mentions his name anywhere. So.
I appreciate you threw him a bone.
Yeah, you know. Anyway, come see the show, and when you do,
I will
come backstage and say hi.
I will. I'll bring you some roses or something.
Please do. That's the customary thing to do when you come to a Broadway show.
Yeah.
Bring the actors some roses. And Steve, you can come too. You come, please.
I'll be there.
Please come. It was lovely chatting with you guys.
Yeah, likewise. Nice thank you for taking the time.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Break a leg or whatever
break
they
a leg.
Say.
That's exactly right. Break a leg. Thank you.
Asif Manvi. Novelizers.
The Novelizers presents Scream. Chapter 1. A Kernel of Truth. But see, kernel is spelt K-E-R-N-E-L. Get it? Good. Novelized by Chase Mitchell, narrated by me, Asif Manvi. Dimension. Boom! Picture that production company logo swooshing onto the screen with its iconic purple typeface. It's the mid-90s, so this is how we know that whatever we're about to see is, one, gonna star hot young primetime soap stars getting murdered in increasingly horrific ways, and two, we're in the capable hands of an incredibly popular and well-liked producer with his whole life ahead of him, Harvey Weinstein. Then, the title card, Scream, followed by the actual sound of a scream, in case you didn't get it the first time. The next thing I hear after that is the phone ring. It's muffled from behind this pantry door. But it's the 90s, and it's a landline, so it's loud as friggin' hell. You're probably like, pantry door? What? So I should probably back up. My name is Carl Ginsburg, and I'm an unpopped pan of Jiffy Pop. Why Carl Ginsburg? Well, you can ask my parents, who are, you guessed it, two giant sentient ears of corn. Anyway, I've been stuck in this goddamn cabinet for 3 weeks now, waiting to get put on that stove. And if this phone call gets in the way of that, I swear to God. Back to the call. Hello, says Drew Barrymore. And even from in here, she sounds like a pure angel sent down from heaven in a flattering white sweater and weirdly unflattering haircut. Hello, replies a menacing voice on the other end of the phone, who's probably a little-known voice actor getting paid less than anyone else in the film. No wonder he sounds pissed. Who is this? The voice says.
Who are you trying to reach? Replies Drew. Oh, crap. I hope it's not the IRS. I made some really bad investments this year. Beanie Babies, Fruitopia, Pets.com. This better not be for me. Don't say me. Don't say me. Don't say me. I don't know, the voice says back. Phew. It's not the IRS. Just some scary sounding anonymous stranger. Well, I think you have the wrong number, Drew says. You tell him, Queen. Do I? He says. It happens, she says. Take it easy. Drew hangs up on his ass. Good. Popcorn time. Let's get the show on the stove. The phone rings again. Damn it. I swear, if we're ever in the same room, I'm going to kill this guy. Hello, says my incredibly patient dream woman. I'm sorry, says the voice. I guess I dialed the wrong number. So why'd you dial it again? She says. And yeah, good question, my guy. There better be a pretty good reason why you're delaying me from getting my pop on. To apologize, he said. Damn, this guy is actually kind of smooth. You're forgiven, she says. Bye now. Wait, wait, wait. Don't hang up, he pleads. I want to talk to you for a second. Ugh. They've got 900 numbers for that, she says. And don't I know it. Drew's family hasn't gotten the bill yet, but when everyone's asleep, I've been calling 1-900-BUTTER-ME 3 times a night. She hangs up again. And then finally, mercifully, Drew turns on the stove. Here we go. It's all happening. I've been so patient. I've been saving myself for her. I never gave up my Bernginity to any movie theater or theme park or state fair. She pulls me out. Ha! Grabs me by the handle. And puts me on a burner. That's right, baby. Throw me around. God, this is making me so hot. But then, if you can even believe this shit, the phone rings again. Bro, why are you pop blocking me? Hello, says the persistent asshole. Who is this? Says my goddess who can do no wrong. You tell me your name, I'll tell you mine. We don't have time for this. I'm about to come. I mean pop. I don't think so, she says. And that's smart. You never know if this guy is someone dangerous, like TMZ. What's that sound? He asks annoyingly. Popcorn, she says. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. She mentioned me. She knows my name. The guy's back shelf. I'm never gonna believe this. You're making popcorn? The voice asks. Yeah, that's right, bitch. She is. Now go call 1-900-BUTTER-ME and leave us alone. I only eat popcorn at the movies, he says. Great. Not only is this guy unsalting my game, he's also a popcorn amateur, a popcorn tourist. Disgusting. Well, I'm getting ready to watch a video, Drew says. And actually, I have to stop and explain something here. Videos are something people used to put into a VCR. A VCR is something that plays tapes that people used to rent from a store. Ugh. A store was a place people would physically walk into to buy various goods. Oh, God. Okay, goods were something that used to not have enormous tariffs on them. And tariffs are, you know what? Never mind. Back to their convo, which is still going on for some reason. Hey, I'm popping here. What are you going to watch? The voice says. Oh, just some scary movie, Drew says. Do you like scary movies? He says. And wow, you really put some English on that line. Almost like it's some kind of catchphrase that will be known to audiences for the next 30 years. Uh-huh, says Drew. What's your favorite scary movie? He says. Damn, that was really quotable too. I don't know, she says. You have to have a favorite, he says. What comes to mind? Bro, quit hassling my girl. She says she doesn't know. Halloween, she says. And you know what? Actually, great choice. My grandfather, a huge metal bowl of popcorn, was in that movie. But also, yawn. Maybe it's the intense heat that's rapidly expanding my aluminum foil bag over an open flame, but I am so spacing out of this convo. You know what I'd rather talk about while I'm boiling in my own oil on this stove with no one paying attention to me? Myself. Jiffy Pop is a popcorn varietal owned by Congra Brands, a giant agribusiness factory farm conglomerate that's never done anything wrong. The product, me, consists of popcorn kernels, oil, and flavoring agents contained within a foil-covered disposable aluminum pan. Listen, I've never asked what flavoring agents are, and you probably shouldn't either. Anyway, once the paper outer covering is removed, the pan is held by an attached handle over a heat source, such as a stove burner or campfire, and gently agitated, causing the kernels to pop and push outward against the foil. The pan is then removed from the heat, the foil is torn open, and the popcorn is served. Isn't that a great story? My grandmother used to tell me that every night before bed. Okay, let's see. What are they bullshitting about now? So you got a boyfriend? The voice says. And whoa. What the fuck did I miss over here? Why is he asking about a boyfriend? Set him straight, Drew. Why? You want to ask me on a date? She says. Maybe, he says. Do you have a boyfriend? Come on, Drew. Tell him about us. No, she says. Wow. Okay, so I guess this 2.5 minutes has meant nothing to you? I am steaming over here. Literally, I am steaming. There's steam shooting out of the top of my foil. That's a sign that I'm done. By the way, not that anyone cares. Done with this conversation. Done with Drew, and done in the sense that someone needs to pull me off of the stove before I burn to death. Hello? You never told me your name, the voice says. Why do you want to know my name? Drew asks. Because I want to know who I'm looking at, he says. Oh, shit. I think this guy is TMZ. He's hiding in the bushes snapping photos, Drew. What did you say? She asks. I want to know who I'm talking to. He stammers, trying to recover, but nah, he already said that shit. Nah, no way. This is messed up. Drew, come back to the stove where it's safe. That's not what you said. Look, I gotta go, she says. Wait, I thought you were gonna go out, he says. Nah, I don't think so. Boom, that's right, motherfucker. Don't hang up on me, he yells. But she does, and thank God. I'm sure that will have zero consequences later. The movie finally cuts back to me, and it's about time. Jesus, I'm definitely not making above SAG day rate for this. My agent was supposed to get me second billing. It was supposed to be Drew Barrymore, Carl Ginsburg, the unpopped bag of Chiffy Pop, Nev Campbell. But now look at me. My foil is bulging out in every direction. I'm getting stretch marks. My kernels are withering. This is why actors over 4 minutes old can never find work. Then, do you believe this shit? The phone rings for approximately the 100,000th time. This guy just will not take no for an answer. And behavior like that does not belong in a Weinstein movie. Listen, asshole, Drew says. No, you listen, you little bitch, he snaps back. You hang up on me again, I'll gut you like a fish. Two things here. First, nobody calls my girl Drew a bitch. Next, why are you bringing other food items into this, bro? She's decided on popcorn. Gut her like a popcorn. Then this guy asks her if she, quote, wants to play a game. Real original, buddy. We've all seen the Saw movies. Anyway, I don't think Drew wants to play the game because she starts running all through the house, everywhere but the kitchen, apparently, locking all the doors. She tells him she's going to call the police. And you know what, Drew? Maybe pump the brakes on that because I've got a lot of outstanding parking tickets. What do you want? She asks him, and he replies, to see what your insides look like. Well, I know what my insides look like, Drew. They're burnt. They're burnt as hell. She hangs up on his sorry ass again. Then the doorbell rings. Selfishly at this point, I don't care who it is, as long as it's somebody who respects the sanctity of popcorn timing. I haven't felt this neglected since I was mistakenly placed in the international food section at Albertsons. The phone rings in Drew's hand yet again. Wow, this guy's putting up 1-900-BUTTER-ME level phone charges. You should never say who's there, he says. Don't you watch scary movies? It's a death wish. You might as well just come out here to investigate a strange noise or something. Wow, so he's a murderer and a mansplainer. Drew, get off the phone and start tweeting. Cancel his ass. I mean, in like 20 years, when both tweeting and canceling are America's last two remaining economic sectors before the great robot take... Oh, sorry. For a guy so connected to movies, I can be terrible about spoilers. Anywho... It doesn't matter because Drew can't hear me. She's crying. Look, you've had your fun now, she says to this jerky boy, but I think you better just leave or else.
Or else what?
Or else my boyfriend will be pissed when he finds out. I thought you didn't have a boyfriend. I lied, she says. I do have a boyfriend. Wow, it's nice to finally get some recognition around here. Now, Drew, get back into the kitchen where you belong. I didn't mean that how it sounded, actually. Don't start tweeting, please. I'm getting scared, the voice says. I'm shaking in my boots. His name wouldn't be Steve, would it? No, sir. My name is Carl Ginsburg, and if someone will pull me off this burning flame that has become my funeral pyre, I'll be happy to introduce myself. How do you know his name? Drew says. Wait, what? Steve is real? Who the fuck is Steve? Turn on the patio lights, the voice says. She does. And wouldn't you know it, that two-timing trollop has some other douchebag out there in a leather jacket, tied up in a chair with duct tape on his mouth. For once, I agree with the voice. Kill this guy! Then, the voice starts asking her movie trivia. First of all, nerd alert, is this guy trying to kill her or bore her to death? I've never heard of Trivial Pursuit being used as a weapon. Second, Drew, come get me so I can help. I'm literally a bag of popcorn. I've seen like every movie ever made. Name the killer in Halloween. No. Come on, it's your favorite scary movie, remember? He had a white mask. He stalked the babysitters. Not to be that popcorn, but that kind of sounds exactly like this movie. I don't know, she says. Drew, phone a friend. It's me. I'm still in the kitchen. Come on. Yes, you do. What's his name? Steve's counting on you. Michael. Michael Myers. Yes. Very good. Now for the real question. Name the killer in Friday the 13th. Jason! 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 I'm sorry. That's incorrect. No, it's not, she cries. No, it's not. Listen, it was Jason. I saw that movie 20 goddamn times. Then you should know. Jason's mother, Mrs. Voorhees, was the original killer. Jason didn't show up until the sequel. I'm afraid that was a wrong answer.
Damn, got her ass on technicality.
Lucky for you, he says, there's a bonus round. But poor Steve, I'm afraid he's out.
The patio lights turn on, and Steve has been gutted from tip to taint. He looks like what happens when someone rips open my foil top and the popcorn comes spilling out, except, you know, the popcorn is guts.
Hey, the voice says, we're not finished yet. Final question. Are you ready?
Please, please leave me alone, she says.
Answer the question and I will. What door am I at?
What?
There are two main doors to your house, the front door and the patio doors. If you answer correctly, you live. It's very simple.
Don't do this. I can't. I won't.
Your call.
Guys, let's wrap this up. My kernels are starting to look like an atomic bomb went off. Just then, the voice throws patio furniture through the door and Drew goes running to the kitchen where, guess what? Oh, no big deal. I'm just literally on fire. The smoke from me is filling the kitchen. I've been totally abandoned. This is the worst thing happening in this house right now. Anyway, then Drew's parents are driving home down an insanely long road lined with corn, my brothers and sisters. Drew sneaks outside. The fire from me is spreading in the kitchen, my final revenge. The killer crashes through the glass and chases Drew through the yard. He stabs him in the chest, Drew knees him in the balls, two equally damaging things to a human body. Meanwhile, inside, the parents walk through the kitchen. Finally, some more attention. Drew's mom grabs me off the stove. Hey, she's a little older, but I can work with that. Then she throws me into the sink, which for a heat and dryness activated foodstuff like me is basically like getting waterboarded. Okay, okay, I'll confess everything, officer, just... But my would-be confession is interrupted by the sound of Mom getting on the phone and hearing Drew being dragged out into the yard. And even with my pericarp, that's the fluffy white stuff that pops out of the popcorn kernel, noobs soaked to the gills, I could still hear the exchange that followed. Get into the car, Drew's dad says. Drive down to the McKenzies. I bet the McKenzies know when to take popcorn off the friggin' stove. Not my daughter, Drew's mom says. Call the police. The mom then walks outside and screams. Hey, that'd be a pretty good title for the movie. Anyway, Drew is hanging from a tree by her intestines, and I'm soaked with water in the sink. In other words, we both had a pretty shitty night.
Thank you to my guest, Asif Manvi. Thank you to this week's writer, the hilarious Chase Mitchell. And we'll be back soon with another all-new episode of The Dark Knight. I'm Dave Hill, and thank you. And this is Stephen Levinson.
Stephen? Hi. Hi, everybody.
We did it. The Novelizers is hosted by me, Dave Hill, and produced by Stephen Levinson. Hey, Stephen. With Graham Douglas, Cole Emhoff, Kevin Carter, Christine Bullen, Dennis DiClaudio, and Rob Kuttner. Music by Cole Emhoff. Additional editing by Sunita Haberlein. Graphic design by Crystal Dennis. Theme song by Andrew Lynn. Performed by Knotts. Additional support by Elizabeth Tavares. Distributed by Cincinnati Public Radio. The Novelizers is an AI-free podcast. Written, narrated, and edited, and scored entirely by human beings. Can you imagine that? The Novelizers is a work of unauthorized parody. Follow The Novelizers on Instagram, Threads, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. And please support us on Patreon. Copyright 2026, Novelizers, LLC.